Hello and welcome to the Purple Rock Survivor podcast. I am your host, Andy. Last week, John made a funny comment about how he was going to maybe get rid of me if a better offer came around, and I blindsided him before he could blindside me. Because welcome to the podcast this week, Emily.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm glad to not be John.
Always. That is an evergreen statement, any season, any episode. All right, let's talk about this episode, not this episode of the podcast, because we haven't done it yet, but I'm sure it's going to be amazing. How about this episode of Survivor this week? Did you like it?
That's a complicated, surprisingly complicated question. Yeah. I don't think I disliked it as much as other people, in that the experience of watching the show, like, I still had fun, you know, with some stuff, and I found it interesting, and there was lots of compelling things, but, you know, we'll definitely get into, like, the twist. I'm, like, not super into that, and I don't think it, like, improved anything, but I wasn't, like, you know, I think that they, like, I did see a commenter say, like, this is the worst Survivor episode ever, and I was, like, oh, honey, no, I wish.
I wish,
as some, you know, someone who watched the merge of Island of the Idols with other human beings, that was not a fun experience. And, you know, there's been more boring episodes. There's been more episodes that made me angrier. There's episodes that made me sadder. So, you know,
I didn't even think this is the worst episode this season.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think the hourglass takes the cake there.
I mean, this one at least ended with somebody being voted out and being eliminated, right?
And had a tribal council.
Yeah. And, you know, I think some of the argument was, yeah, we'll get into the twist very soon, but that it created this experience of, you know, feeling like what I'm about to view doesn't matter. Whereas we were told in the Marmerge episode that this is not, like, what you're going to see. We're not going to tribal council. This isn't going to happen. So it's like, oh, okay.
And it was like, not only what you just saw will not matter, but you're not going to see what does matter for another week.
Yeah. Yeah. So for me, I was spoiled on this twist. You actually, I'm pretty sure it was you, gave a heads up that a twist was, a spoiler for a twist was out there.
I did. You're so kind.
But you did you get spoiled as well?
Yeah, I had seen the tweet. So yeah. I saw it, like, there was no
yeah, I think after really you did that, it. I also saw something, or I might have even dug for it, because, you know, it was clear, like, because the source, it was, you know, right. Redman of Inside Survivor. He doesn't spoil outcomes. So mm-hmm. I wasn't as worried about it. And then I also want to research how legitimate it was, because you were like, I've seen people talk about it, but I haven't seen the thing.
Yeah, I think our issue that you figured out was that Redman had posted it on his Patreon, because, like, usually he'll tweet about stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I wasn't out here trying to steal content or anything. It came to me. But yeah, and so before, just seeing it, you know, like, it's the internet, this stuff happens. Like, we see, you know, just a random screenshot and people are like, oh, this thing has happened. And while I, you know, we'll get into, well, I didn't like the twist, the way it was phrased in that made it seem, I think, significantly worse.
Yeah, there was a key difference that I did not know about tonight. But in general, mm-hmm. I had heard about it. And thus, I had somewhat mentally prepared, right? I've had a few weeks to adjust to it. The episode did not bother me as much, because I could see a situation, if I was learning of this in real time, like many of the viewers were, that it would just piss me off, because I don't like it. My reaction was, when I saw it, I was like, no, that's not what I want out of Survivor. Nothing that this episode presented really changed that stance for me. But because I was able to get past the anger stage for the past few weeks, I was able to kind of live in that.
Start with denial.
Yes. You very much did. Like, maybe that's not true. And I think maybe that's why I researched it, because I also wanted it to not be true. You know, right. Goes against my whole, you know, campaign about these advantages aren't so bad, which is not quite an accurate stance on my stance, but I understand if that's the takeaway people get. I tend to get loud. So yeah, because I was I was a little prepared for that. I actually enjoyed the rest of the episode. I thought there was, like, a lot of good stuff in this episode. So, it was, yeah, the twist does change things. It would make it so it's not a great episode, especially in comparison to some of the ones we've gotten recently. But I thought it was another solid episode of Survivor for what I think has been a pretty good season so far. Well, now we've only been talking about it. Let's really get into the twist. I think we both said we didn't like it. Why is this a bad thing?
So my main thing, you know, and as we've discussed before, and I think this is where people are coming from when they think that you're like against not liking twists, is that it's so often a knee-jerk reaction. And I deal with this at work too. And, you know, a lot of people do, I think, that any change is just going to be seen as negatively right away, which I totally get. I'm not big on change either. But, you know, I think we try to like, you know, sit with it, think about it, and stuff. And in this case, it's just Survivor needs to stop taking away the vote. Like, that is your show. That is what the show is. And I don't know why they want to get rid of it. Like Idols, Advantages and stuff, that's just to make the vote less predictable maybe and like switch things up. But this whole idea of having there be fewer votes or fewer people participating in challenges is just so weird. And I think another thing that I don't believe I've heard mentioned is like the final seven doesn't need help, you know, like it's a weird time to do it too. It's like final seven is usually a huge moment to flip, especially now when you have like Idols end up when like, you know, you can't do anything at four and Idols end at five and a lot of other Advantages end at six, that like seven, not only numbers, what is just usually a big moment to swing. And instead they're like, what if we just remove that possibility?
This was the last time to use the shot in the dark.
Who fucking knew? You know, the jury, sorry, I'm so bad at not swaying on this. The jury should not be surprised. I don't know. Like, it's just unnecessary. I think I get them trying to like switch things up, but first of all, you're doing too much. Like, they didn't need to do all of their ideas in one season, especially when it's a shorter season. I think I would have understood, even though it would have still been bad, if it like was leading to a double boot, because again, it's a shorter season. Like, if they were trying to get through that. But it was just why?
Yeah, in general, I reserve judgment on these things because I do believe that Survivor needs to evolve over time. And they're not always going to know how they need to evolve. I give them a little leeway in that they're going to screw some things up. It's the nature of attempting change. But just like I'm with you. Voting out people works. I don't think that's an aspect that needs to change. And I've even like slightly defended fire making. I still don't like it. I'd be fine if it was eliminated from the show forever, but I at least understand the problem that it's trying to solve in that the final is generally boring. Final tribal council is usually a person who can win and two people who can't. So by removing one more opportunity to vote out somebody who could, maybe you'll get some where two people could win. It happened once so far. But you know what? Winners at War had two people who could win. Yeah. Winners at War, I'd say, had two very different contenders, but it's such a very unique circumstance.
Yeah.
But I suppose if that person hadn't come back, they would have as well. But so that's the problem I think it's trying to solve. I don't know if that's the way to do it. And also, I can allow for that one a bit in that final four isn't really voting. It's one person's choice, usually in a traditional manner. Whereas this, you're eliminating that. But also, I just didn't like the idea of somebody fails at a challenge and that could be it for them. I don't think challenges need that level of import. And I say that as somebody who pushes back sometimes against people who hate that challenges have any level of import. But, you know, it's just, and so when I first heard it, I was hoping that at least it would be a challenge where failure meant some level of giving up, right? And I'm not looking for like old school style, like Australian Outback, Palau. Like literally you have to give up in order to do this. But like, you know, the typical hang from like a poll, like the poverty and like Aussie have done really well in I know that not really well described.
For some reason, I was picturing Hang.
That's accurate to the way I described it. But hang on to a pole, not from. That's better. People like, don't typically fail immediately, especially just from heights. You usually at least at some point have to give up. That I think would make it a little better because at least then you're sending the signal that like give up and you might go home. Whereas here, I don't think Deshaun didn't want to hold those things. He just couldn't.
Yeah. And it's just, and like, I mean, it's good that they gave people the option of sitting up, but then that whole concept, like that makes it like, I mean, my first thought was like, it didn't happen, but like, what if all but one person set out? Do they both are first and last, you know? What if two people, you don't win, so you lose, like, because you don't get to change your mind, you know?
But they, I think the show would love two people.
Sure, but they shouldn't love that.
Yeah, and, I know. Sorry, keep going.
No, I mean, and I know, you know, but it's like, we don't like to, you know, we do try to be a little more understanding and stuff of like production and why they make the decisions they do. But it really sometimes just starts to feel like they like miss the point of what we're doing here. Because even the people who aren't that into strategy like the challenges, you know, you don't want to like this weird, you know, between this and the hourglass twist, there's like this weird discouragement of like participating.
Yeah.
Which is strange. And like, that's what I don't think they're realizing, this like the beware advantage, which I don't like super hate, but I think a lot of these new things they're bringing out are encouraging passive gameplay. Yeah. And like, why is that the goal? And do they even realize that's what's happening? And if they don't realize, what the fuck, what are they doing? Like,
there's no way they understand, because there's no way that's something they would encourage. Like for me, I'm welcoming a lot of changes if it is to punish passive gameplay. If it is, you know, things that exist in the game to encourage people to do stuff, I can understand that, because it's a show that needs stuff to happen in order for it to, you know, have forward progression on an episode by episode basis. But yeah, no, every one of these, don't do it and you're better off. Except thing, obviously how tonight worked out. Continue.
Sorry, but like, and the thing is, why don't they, you know, how can they not understand that when there are people who like work on the show and work in television? Like, we're, you know, super fans and we have a podcast, but we have no qualifications. Like, I don't study game theory, you know, I don't create games. I have not played on a show like the, you know, anything that would possibly give you that kind of qualification. Like I studied film and television, you know, but not reality, not that kind of thing. And like, yeah, sure, the super fans are more into this than like the average person. But I don't think that should preclude production knowing that passive gameplay is not as fun. Like, I just don't get what their reasoning is. And that's the thing. Like, we understand why Idols came about, right? We even kind of understand Idol nullifiers, even though we have many times said that that's a flawed thing. And like, you know, I get why they bring certain things, but like, I just don't understand what they're going for. What's the goal? What was the dream scenario? And why did they think that was a positive scenario? Yeah.
I imagine most things are trying to manufacture drama. So in this, I can see them thinking, oh man, it's going to be so intense that nobody is going to want to be that first person to fail. And it's awesome how it's like 3 seconds. It's like, okay, well, that's done.
Taken a while, it's like they cut it down, you know. That's really ultimate, like 1 second of drama, no matter how long it takes, because it's like you're waiting for a while, someone drops, they're pissed, and then it's like, well, we don't know whether this strategy will matter or not. Mm-hmm. Is someone about to get totally screwed who would have gone, like, you know, it's just stupid.
But yeah, and I think the whole you're disencouraging people from taking risks, that comes from allowing people to sit out. You do this and it's just like everybody's participating, and if you suck, you're gone. That would at least, I would understand I'm still opposed to it, because I just vote people out, man. There's enough other things in the game to protect people. You added a dice that nobody used. One person used. But if they have that, then it's like, you know, failure has a consequence. That I can understand within kind of the rubric of the show and also kind of just the attitudes that the show seems to present. This is a show that like cut two people on day one, more than once actually, because you know, blood, you know, there's an asterisk of Blood versus Water, but those two people never really got real in the real game. In fact, those two people had less in the real game than in Plow. So it is something that, like, you know, they're fine with, you know, doing things that are unfair and hurts the person that's fine. It's like all of that makes sense to me. But if you allow people to opt out, you create a situation where it's like the only people who will go for this should be the people who feel like they really need immunity. You know, if you feel like you don't need immunity, then why are you competing? In which case, and other people pointed out, if the objective is to eliminate like weaker players, not that, you know, people who aren't good in challenges always translate as weaker players. Those people aren't going to compete in such a scenario, right? And, you know, the one of them did not. Well, two of them really did not. Now, of course, it's really funny and how specific, because yeah, those are the general thoughts of how it worked out, is that a person who didn't participate got eliminated, and they were, you know, somebody who we felt would lose to anybody in tribal council. So it ended up, you know, eliminating a boring character and saving one of the more featured characters. But that is that is not the design of the way this thing was supposed to go.
And I'll say, I don't think Liana was necessarily a boring character. I think she maybe wasn't as strong of a game player, but I think Heather was the boring character. But yeah, that actually does bring me to another point I had about it, that I'm worried that they'll get the wrong lesson. Like we see, you know, happen with like results oriented is like the aforementioned idol nullifier, which worked out great in David versus Goliath, was super fun. But that doesn't make it a good advantage. You know, we saw it work out in a very, very bad way in Islands of the Idols. And also because that's how it's probably more likely to be used. Yeah. You know, it took a lot for them to get it to work, you know, the way they did in David versus Goliath. And especially in season, if they're going to keep doing this thing where people are going to know who has idols. I mean, we haven't seen an idol nullifier, so in this season, but just in general,
there was a steal, though.
Yes. But like, which again was sort of the same thing where we're like, oh, this worked out because people knew about it. And it's like, so they're getting some of these things working out, but that doesn't actually mean they're a good advantage. And sort of on the same way, I feel like they're probably seeing the shot in the dark as like a bust, but I actually think that's something that has potential, yeah. Even though it only got played once. And, you know, so they didn't go home basically because of it. First of all, that's hilarious. And I'm not someone who's anti-Sydney. It's just, that's funny.
It's objectively generally when these funny. Things work out, it's funny, yes.
Exactly. But, like, I think even when it's sort of like idols, even when they're not played, it made people think about things and feel like they had to think a little harder and blindside more and stuff. So I think it still added to the game, even though it wasn't used and it didn't, like, quote unquote, pay off because someone was safe because of it.
I actually think it's great that the shot in the dark wasn't used that often. You know, that was the one worry about it, is it's just going to render all these things useless. I think it should be a thing that you have to think long and hard about whether you wanted to use it or not, and a desperation ploy. Well, that might not work out, right? So yeah, I hope that one sticks around. But this, the one, it didn't, you know, it worked out in that it saved Deshaun because of the element about it that I did not know about when I had the extra part. I did not know that the person who takes the shot in the dark, or the do or die, we had it explained to us as 50-50, I believe, which was not. But yeah, it just was like, you know, you lose and you're out, you win and you're not out. Him being immune meant that this was actually pretty much the thing that saved Deshaun. I think we can say with near certainty, if he doesn't, you know, win that, if it doesn't exist, then Deshaun would have gotten voted out. The only, you know, tiny hesitance is, I suppose we don't know if Erica and Heather would have wanted to work with him and thus not voted him out, but I'm pretty sure they would have voted him out. Yeah, I don't think they would have worked to save him in this scenario.
Right, because so also think, in that case, Liana probably goes against him instead of having the desperation to work with him. So there's, I don't think Eric and Heather really could.
So the immunity he gained, even though it was a 33 and blah, blah, blah chance to get it, that was actually a better chance than voting would have presented him, because we obviously know he was not going to win the challenge. So it ended up saving him. But I think the fact that there was no drama in the challenge, and the fact, I hope they watched it and realized that there's no drama in watching somebody choose box. I suppose there's a little drama, right? You are watching, wondering what's going to happen. But
yeah,
I don't know if they really need to get in on that, like, you know, find the money in the suitcase type excitement. Or, you know, let's make a deal, as everybody wants to talk about so much. You know, we'll get to it, kind of. But yeah, like, I just, that's another problem with this twist, is not only does it run opposed to kind of what I think Survivor needs to be, it's just not that interesting. Like, yeah, seeing somebody just take a weird stab at it is less fun than if they were doing something. It's less fun than a challenge. It's also less fun than what I wanted it to be, is that I wanted Jeff to present him with a coin, and then put that coin in a box, and he had to pick the right box, because that would fit in the entire, you know, seasons of not understanding the metaphors in which they are delivering. And I actually discussed this with Matt, and Matt's like, no, and then you can make it like three card Monty. So we were so close to nailing it when those boxes came out. I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh no, 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 picking the coin.
Yeah, he was, he told me about his guess on that today. He was very excited.
Yeah. I actually, DM'd him. Was like, we were so close. And then he had, it was like, I haven't watched yet. I'm like, oh, I haven't really spoiled anything. So close. Okay, let's talk about the Monty Hall thing. It's so funny. We watch late. And so our friend Brad was like, Andy and Emma better talk about them, properly explain it. And it's like, settle down, math boy.
Fuck you, Brad.
Yeah. If you
stay
want.
Stay in your lane, math boy.
You really want Emma and me especially to be discussing math?
We're writers.
So I actually looked up the Monty Hall thing today, and it started to talk about probabilities, and my eyes glossed over, and I did not care.
I listened to Know It Alls, where they brought in Christian Ubicki to explain it, and I was like, that's nice, Christian, but he's still got his attitude. Still got it.
Yeah. But here's the thing. Everybody wants to start cite the statistics, and that's what you're supposed to do. He made the wrong choice, and somehow it worked out. What do you mean somehow? Do you guys not understand percentages? Admittedly, not a math person, but a 1 in 3 chance is still a pretty strong chance. And if you want to base your decision-making on the higher probability, then fine, switch the box. But stats don't work in single instances. This is why Billy Bean's shit don't work in the playoffs. So it's not that, like, every time you get up to bat, if you are doing something that you'll, you know, it'll succeed. It's that over a period of instances, if you play the higher percentage play, it will work out more often than not. But in one time, man, him going with his gut, and thus that being the decision he can live with, is just a good, as good a reason as following that this is now a 66% chance.
Right. If he had switched, like, is he going to be that comfortable with, like, well, the stats said that was the right decision, but I had the right one and changed it.
Yeah. Like, and, like, if you're somebody who, you know, studied the Monty Hall problem, like our nerdy friend Brad, or apparently Xander, then yeah, maybe, because you're in your mind, that's the way to go. But yeah, it's one time anything could happen, man.
Yeah, I will say now that I'm watching this, my husband, he works with numbers in a way that I do not, and in a way that people ask me what his job is, and I say, I don't know. When this was airing, he's like, oh, it's the Monty Hall problem. And then when Xander said it, he's like, good for you. Xander was like a little too impressed that he knew what it was.
Like, every time Xander does anything, they're like, oh, you're not a moron because you have abs and long hair, you know.
Like, actually, I think he is originally from Florida. He just lives in Chicago now. Because I was going to say, I was like, he's not even from the coast. But yeah, as someone who grew up in a surf town, I don't have that bias. Like, you can do both things. My father was a journalist. He also surfed. Like, these are just past tense because he's old and retired. He is still with us. But Yeah, and then he's like, oh, you have to switch. And I know I'd heard this before. I was like, oh, there's like a thing, right? Yeah. There's like a thing you're supposed to do. And he's like, you have to switch. And then he didn't. And then it worked. And I was like, math sucks. Yeah. So.
Suck it, math. That is the important part. So you wanted us to talk about this Monty Hall problem. That is the takeaway.
Math would have ruined his fucking game.
That's right. And possibly the season. So because then this whole twist would have ruined the episode. It'd be a black mark. So math is evil and guts are always the way it is.
Math is bad.
You should construct your team based on what the scouts and your gut say. That's what we're saying. So why vote out Leanne in the first place? Did that make sense, or should they have gone with Ricard?
Well, as with many things, it depends on from whose point of view you're looking at, Andy.
Yeah, I mean, for Ricard, I think it worked out well. Yes!
For Ricard, yes. For Heather,
so we got Erica and Xander's perspective to think of here.
Yeah. You know, for Xander, he at least had a reason. You know, he had a thought out reason. I think it's fine. I think it's a little late in the game to be that shield focused. Like, everyone's like, oh, Ricard is definitely the next boot and blah, blah, blah. And sure, could be. But Ricard's also been pretty good at challenges. He would have to win one challenge. And then Xander has to play, you know, and then so if he's safe, then why don't they just try to get Xander before his, like, the last time of his idol? At the very least, he's then used it. If he uses it correctly, he is then a bigger threat, and then they are more determined to get him out at five than they might be right now, where they're like, yeah, sure, he has these toys, but when is he done with them? Which they may not be thinking about that. We don't really know. There's a lot of, you know, wishful thinking with various winner chances right now. But yeah, so I don't know. Could go both ways. Like, I think he wanted to do something so bad. He was so excited. He's like, well, I made a move. And I'm like, sweetie, you were there.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of you for that. But
voting the correct way is actually a huge step up for Xander. Yeah. Like, people telling him where the vote was going to go, and then that actually being true, huge. I mean, technically, it was true in the Tiffany vote, but, you know, only in a roundabout way. That was supposed to originally be a split vote between she and he, and then there was this Heather business and all of that. So this, you know, baby steps. It's working out. I liked his reasoning. I like that, you know, he didn't immediately default to, you know, biggest threat. And he's not wrong. If there people are talking about Ricard in this way, you know, as soon as Ricard's gone, they're going to start possibly, at the very least, talking about me this way. The nice thing for him right now is he has multiple shields. So if Ricard will win, you know, they could just go back to Deshaun. There's also Danny.
But he can also apparently just be like, wow, isn't that Erica sneaky with all of the blank that she's done?
We'll wait on that one.
And this is to preview. Not say that she has done nothing, but, like, in terms of sneakiness, it's just something about that is quicking me out a bit.
Yeah, is there some stereotypes here that, you know, could be involved? Yeah, and so I like that reasoning, but I also, like, I don't know if Ricard's the one to do this with, man. He is not, I don't think, a shield so much as he's a ticking time bomb, and I don't mean that in an Abby Maria type way, but, like, I do not think it's out of the realm of possibility that Ricard himself would engineer a blindside of Xander with a
split. Oh, absolutely. Next
week, you know? Like,
no doubt in my mind.
So, like, I think, you know, he has been, you know, strong in challenges, three wins so far, if we're just talking about challenges in general. You know, winning a reward challenge isn't necessarily any less difficult than winning an immunity challenge, unless it's pick a rock from a bag. As a reminder that, yes, the show makes plenty of mistakes, and I'm not afraid to say it. I'm just saying you might be a happier fan in your life if you don't immediately complain of the existence of things before you see it. Anyway, that's a sidebar that, of course, I'm going to say all the time. I don't even remember where I was. I was talking about, Xander and Ricard. His bigger threat is that, like, this guy is smart and capable of doing things. He just betrayed his biggest alliance partner.
And she wasn't even mad at him.
Yeah. So you sure he's the person you want to be in an alliance with? And what makes it worse is that Xander used his extra vote in order to make it happen because he's a little afraid. I'm assuming this is the logic. Actually, what the first one is like, was this also the final vote for the extra vote? Because the I'd seen Final Six was the thing. The shot in the dark, I actually never quite knew. I was assuming.
No, but Final Six would make sense because it's a fucking 1 out of 6 chance.
Yes, exactly.
That's their flip. They didn't do the flip of coin, but they're like, let's just make this wrong one more way. You don't roll. You take the dice. You put it in the box. You pull the paper. It's 1 out of 6, but it ends at 7.
That way it's guaranteed somebody, but there wouldn't be 6 shots at it. I don't know. Because that's the other thing I don't understand about the shot in the dark is it a 1 in 6 chance for everybody pulling and thus?
I believe so.
That would make most sense. It doesn't seem to be tied to the amount of people who are doing it.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting because then, you know, if they all did it, only one person saved. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, that's this. But yeah, so he uses his extra vote in order to make this happen. And it's like, man, next week is probably when that thing would be more useful. And like, I understand he wants to make this happen. But it's like, man, 2 weeks ago, you didn't play your extra vote to protect Evie in a game when it would have guaranteed elimination of Liana. This week, he decides to play it to keep Ricard in the game in order to eliminate Liana. Explain to me how this makes sense, because even if you accept the premise that many people were trying to push forward to defend Xander here, it's like, he doesn't care if Evie stays or whatever. It's like, why Ricard? Like, he is not somebody you should care about more. I think it shouldn't be hard to suggest that Evie's interest would align with him in this instance, if for no other reason than now they are truly on the bottom. Evie was also a threat and like a shield possibility, you know? So it's just like, and then this, it ends up not mattering at all. Whereas if he had taken out Ricard, the danger there is it's now a 3-3 scenario if you believe that Liana is still with those other two, which, I suppose the nice thing for Xander is he probably at least understands that she's not with him, sadly. We'll get to that very soon. But you don't need that. It's not actually 3-3 if you hang on to your extra vote. So you'd get rid of Ricard, and now you have a 4-3 advantage with your extra vote. You can take out Liana then if it's that important to you, and you'd still have the shielding of Deshaun. You'd have the protection of 2 votes, which makes the extra vote, like a splitting a vote to flush your idol, a little bit more difficult. So at first I was like, well, the reasoning makes sense. I believe in shielding as a good strategy. I hope that more threatening players, we can argue whether Xander qualifies. I'd say he does, given that people have talked about being threatened by his presence. I think more players should abide by that, and rather than keeping around the players that will eventually get rid of them. But in this instance, it's like, he probably should have gotten rid of Ricard. Like, I think he's dangerous. Let's talk about what we really want to talk about, though, because I teased it right there.
Well, should we talk about Erica's?
Yeah. Let's do it.
Mindset, you know, whether it was right for her. I mean, it's so hard because we're not getting the information on how she feels about Danny and Deshaun.
Yeah.
You know, like, they were from the original tribe. It seems like she's worked with them. We haven't really seen them be against each other, mm-hmm. aside from Shan. And that isn't even really true because they also voted for Shan. But like,
yeah, mostly when we're seeing Erica discuss the game at all, it's with Deshaun.
Right. So if we're thinking that, then maybe she doesn't want them to have anywhere else to go. You know, maybe now they're more likely to be like, hey, let's go Louis Strong, Final 4. In that case, yeah, sure, get rid of Liana. That's someone that Danny and Deshaun probably want to sit with at the end. Maybe now they'll sit with you. And, you know, she also has the other 4. Like, now she has that swing vote. You know, she has that option. She can do some maneuvering there, in theory. Obviously, getting rid of Ricard has the benefit of not having Ricard in the game.
Yes.
Which is, I think, a pretty big benefit.
I think he's the most dangerous player there on every level.
Yeah.
So I think the difficulty here is, and it's this is more something that I feel I can judge from a viewer as of the TV show. Maybe it's less obvious there. I think Erica's chance to win the game just went out the door with Liana. Like, I think Erica's best chance was a final three scenario with Liana and Heather.
Mm-hmm.
People might argue that she has other chances. We'll discuss that later. So in that sense, I think it probably would have made, I think she probably should have gone with the card, and maybe she even realized it. And people have theorized that maybe a way of keeping Erica in line is Xander saying, I'm going to play my extra vote anyway. So she knew at that point, know that her flip would be meaningless. Because yeah. That's the thing. Like,
say, I'm going to play the extra vote. And then don't be like, you know what? I trusted you.
Yeah. Or at the very least, wait and see, because if he does, that's a tie, and then you flipped because you're not drawing rocks, right?
Yeah, because which I think is why he is like, well, they're not going to draw rocks for.
Yeah, I know. Math boy, Brad was all worried. Like, why did they tie? He played his extra vote for force a tie. It's like, yeah, and then you have a revote, man. Like they
right. Yeah, it was like he did that just to go to rocks. It's like, well, no, he's going to threaten to go to rocks. Also, if he cares that much about keeping Ricard in the game, maybe he is willing to go. If he thinks that he needs Ricard there that badly, he's wrong. But if
that would be a disaster, because he could send his ass home to protect again the most threatening player in the
game. Yeah, again, not saying that's a good plan, but like
yeah.
In theory for him, if he's like, no, I want to keep Ricard, like, and Erica was in between anyway, then yeah, he's like, you know, what's the they didn't even get there, they got Katie right before, but it's Greg and Ian, you know, playing chicken with mm-hmm. Wait, did I say Greg and Ian? Tom and Ian playing chicken with Greg. And was that still Jen at that point? Was she still there? Yeah, she would have had to be.
She final four.
But yeah, you know, it's the threat of rocks. It's not, yeah. You don't have to actually do it.
Yeah, back when they used to threaten about a purple rock. All right, so the best thing to happen in Survivor content on Wednesday was not the episode, as strong as some of the moments that we're still going to talk were. It was an extension of a bonus scene from the week before. And now we'll never see it come to pass, because our beloved
Lander? Should have we just done
Leander? Leander?
Yeah, why didn't we do Leander this whole time?
Well, because X's are unique in that. Or sexism. Cool. For putting the guy's initial first. Yeah, so for weeks, and we have not discussed this on the podcast, but you and I have definitely discussed it offline and in comments. People like Mike Hirsch and other Scott have been other joining Scott. In. He actually was the first one to put it forward, and then you're like, I've been thinking about that, but... Anyway, let's talk about it. Well, I mean, keep dancing around it. The potential romantic chemistry between Xander and Liana and our shipping of them.
So, first, I just want to put out, like, a little disclaimer. Shipping real people is weird. I understand. I have heard, you know, Liana said in our exit interview that she is in a happy relationship. That's great. I'm happy for you. Sometimes relationships end though. But also, like, we're very much speaking as like TV characters. Like, I have weirdly enough had people be shipping me on more than one occasion. It's weird. Even when it like ends up being a situation that very briefly in high school works out. It's a weird thing to do. So we're just, on the off chance Liana or her boyfriend or Xander even happened to be listening, we know this is not real life. Or like, we are not speaking about your real life. We're speaking as people who like television and like pretending if you were just characters right now. Okay, so...
Yeah. Yeah, no, sure, it's reductive to analyze a real person, but any other TV show, this is totally what's going down. Like, any totally other non-reality shows, which for us is like every other show we watch. This is the
every
only
other
reality
show. Yeah.
Show we watch.
Yeah, my brain went away for a second. Oh, yeah. So yeah, like, the reason I hadn't brought it up, it very much, as you said, it was like, as soon as, so it was once other Scott posted about it, because for me, as soon as I saw Liana be like, oh, I hate his face, I was like, oh, I hate saying this about someone, because it just, especially like a young woman, it just sounds so reductive. But I was like, oh, she has a crush on him. Which sounds like it's sort of not really, like, but I was just like, that's what it sounds like. You don't hate his his face. He is so young, so not for me, but like aesthetically, it's a good face, yes. You know. That's not what I was like. I'm pretty sure that's not. Oh, I think you're just really annoyed because, oh, what are you gonna do?
And it pieces together like all the other parts of her story that has always been like, Sander, Sander, Sander. And all this is like, oh, now I see what the writers are doing. Like,
look, take it from a Logan and Veronica shipper, man.
That's 100% it, right? Like what I put in comments, 10 things I hate about you. One, your face.
Yeah. Hate that I don't hate you. Not even a little bit. Not even at all.
It's the classic rivals and, it's all this thing. And then
enemies to lovers. Enemies to lovers.
And they also, so then, there's these little Easter eggs and there were these things. And then there, the week prior, they put out a bonus scene where Lyanna and Xander are like fighting over an idol search. And we're like, oh, ho, 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 ho. And then on Wednesday, they drop, and we'll put this on the post. If I forget, we'll put it in comments again. You did it on the comment post.
We were truly Shannon Ricard in that moment.
Yeah. An extended part of that is Xander continues to talk with Shan. Ricard is there, and he's like, oh, well, it's funny you say that because I have a like different thing.
Well, because first Shan's like, you guys need to get along more. Like, it's not like you have to date or anything, even though I think you guys would make a cute couple. Like, it was so just like two. Well, I guess you're in your 40s now, huh? But like two, like 30 somethings being excited over young love, especially. That's
the
like,
thing, they're the two 20 year olds. They're both beautiful people.
They're so beautiful. and like, okay, like Xander lives in Chicago, and Lyanna goes to Georgetown, but she's from Evanston. Look, Jamie and Eric didn't live in the same city, but their parents were from near each other. I'm just saying.
And then he confesses to having a crush on her, and it's just like, oh my god. There's not, to be fair, Lyanna does not say the same thing. Although, When Shan and Ricard tell her, which is also just amazing and beautiful, because she's like, should I tell her? I shouldn't tell her, right?
And Ricard's like, well, now you kind of have to. You can't bring it up in front of her and not tell her.
Lyanna is clearly a little embarrassed, but not like that embarrassed, right? Just not a little flattering, too. And it's just like, next scene. Like, we know where the season finale is going to go. They're going to be in a big argument. And then instead of it, like really blowing up, it's going to end with them kissing.
Like Ron and Hermione. of course, even if she was already, I don't know how long she's been with her boyfriend, because obviously this filmed a while ago and like young people, but like, if someone who looked like Xander was like, oh yeah, I find her so attractive, I'd be like, oh my god, thank you. Like, it doesn't matter it's a nice little ego boost.
She's also, we don't quite know how it works for the incredibly attractive people. She might be like,
boom, that's true. She might be like, yeah, obviously, who is that?
Again, no slight on you or anything like that. It's just,
I went to a school highly ranked for its hot girls. I understand where I lie on that spectrum. We can go to a
I think LA that haircut school is very flattering,
Oh, yeah, she's probably just like, oh yeah, of course he does. I'm sure they all do.
How many 20-year-old men that I've met that don't feel that way?
And this is not to speak of like Lyanna being conceited. This is to speak of Lyanna having an accurate sense of self.
Exactly.
That bone structure. Oh, I die.
Like the confessional she gives about it, she's smiling a bit. There's a bit of energy there, And how, boring life there is. And Shan and Ricard in that moment were you and I, which is like, oh my god, this is gonna happen. They were so like, that's the most energized I've seen Shan since pre-merge.
It's like so funny when you think about how much fake tales, like how annoying they're all. because you need the build. It was like the first night you have like two like 40 20 somethings that are like, let's make out already, and it's like, That's not fun. I need the sexual attention. I need.
Yeah. Well, those people wouldn't be the hero of our shows.
Oh no, we're going to this reward, and there's only one bed.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that, like, yeah, that's the like those two, the Figtails would be like, those wouldn't be the people we'd be rooting for. Maybe one of them, like, we're hoping that she breaks up with the you know,
like Jay is secretly pining for her,
the blandly something. Attractive one. But then, you know, Brian comes in and says, "Welcome to the OC, bitch." Like, that's kind of what that couple was. Like, I couldn't remember the other couple's name.
Luke.
But, yes, Luke. I'm glad. Luke.
They look so similar.
So anyway, yeah, just like all those little moments, and I like the show that gave it to us was enough for us. Just like, these are vibes. That's all it is.
Okay. I'm sorry.
For real people, Luke, might not be.
Luke's the one who says, "Welcome to the OC."
Oh, right. I totally screwed that up. And he's Ryan's like, "Hey, rich kids."
You know what I like about rich kids? Punch. Nothing.
I might need to rewatch. That was a sin on my part.
You should rewatch. It's great. Also, to plug another podcast, the Welcome to the OC Bitches podcast. Lots of fun. And Rachel Bilson and Melinda Clark. Great time. They had Adam Brody on it.
So yeah, no, it is a fun thing for us to discuss.
Yeah. So when people like don't believe it, I'm like, oh yeah, Andy, like when I'm like, yeah, me and Andy are like the same person, and like that seems not true. Yeah, some of it is our age inappropriate love of teen love stories. Yeah, you know, look, who I talk about, you know who I talk about to all the boys I loved before with? Andy.
Another, they're not quite getting along, but there's something there, and then they're so perfect for each other. Everybody's wondering, like, it's cute from Emma, but maybe a little creepy for me. What I like about, you know, teen romances is not that I want a romance with a teen. No, it's that the emotions are big.
I'm 31. It would also be creepy for me.
I still think it's creepier with it, though, especially.
Sure, that's fair. Teen. But like, it's not.
Yeah, like it's like, am I going to start like using the other term for like pedophiles that apply? Oh, no, I don't know what that term is. I'm not a libertarian. But no, it's just with teen stuff, it's that all the emotions are big, and so, you know, yeah, with adults, we're boring and we have mortgages and stuff. That's, I don't want that. It's sad with 40-year-old single people. It's exciting with young people. It's not really sad.
I, unlike you, I didn't really date in high school. And I yearned so hard that it's just like, oh, sometimes the shy, like, bookworm does get the boy. That must be nice.
For me, the last time I was single was early 20s. Like, I don't know what it's like, even late 20s, same. 30s, right? And quick, I don't actually mean that people in their 40s that are single are sad.
No, it's just the entertainment factor.
Yes. Although one of my
you're not sad, shows, you're less interesting. No, I mean, and again, with real life people is very,
very different than entertainment life shows, and that's all I mean. So it was fun to just get a little taste of that in Survivor, and now it's gone.
Yeah.
You know, until there's Ponderosa videos.
But probably not. But what if? And also, what? Like, you know, just gonna say, and again, like, oh, Liana's boyfriend, skip ahead 30 seconds, like. Look, we might not like them, but like Joe and Sierra, you know, it took some time. Just saying.
It just wasn't an immediate
thing. Just saying. Took some time. Just saying.
All right. So another reason why people that were anticipating this twist that was in this episode, as opposed to all the subtextual things that weren't quite, but they were online, was they were sure that this was going to lead to a screwed player. And we were getting escort screwed player purple edit for, you know, the most underfeatured player of the season. I can't remember her name right now. I wanted to quickly discuss Well, let me not promise that. I wanted to discuss this idea.
The other way Andy and I are the same is because we can't stop talking.
Yeah. This idea that's out there in the fan community. I think it's out there in the fan community. I don't think it's just ours. It's probably other places, right? Who knows?
I don't know. I don't go there.
Yeah, I really don't very much. I mean, Twitter a bit. That's where I get my most anger from. But other than that, is there really such a thing as the screwed player purple edit, that the edit buries people who get screwed over in various twists and stuff because they don't want viewers like being angry when that event happens because somebody who they were rooting for, you know, got screwed. Is that a thing?
I think there are two main, well, I guess there are a few. There are a couple examples I can think of that are probably what people are thinking of. You know, sometimes you get the idled out thing, which sometimes people say, it's like, not that they were screwed, but they like bring that up, which you have like Kelly Remington in Worlds Apart. You have Kelly Sharbaugh in...
How confident are you or Sharbaugh or was one of the
actually
others?
Actually, fairly, because Samoa recently.
I recently looked over my Kelly ranking and I still couldn't actually tell you which one it was.
She's the dreadlocked one.
Is it? Yeah.
White girl dreads.
Not Chernecki. Is that one?
No, that's Gabon.
Nice. Anyway, continue.
Why do I know that? I don't remember anything about Gabon.
This is why, you know, you remember more Survivor trivia than me. We have receipts.
Yeah. Anyway, where was I? Oh, yeah. But I think probably the biggest one in terms of especially like screwed is Katie Collins in Blood Versus Water getting rocked out. But, you know, you also think of the opposite. You have, I don't think Jessica Lewis was particularly purple. We've had other, you know, Andrew Savage got idled out. He was
he's on those lists that come around Twitter of like over edited players or something.
Right. There are surely other times people have been idled out than I definitely remember that happening.
Where I think that I've seen this come about was with Kimmy in Cambodia, and they use that to explain because, you know, the No Votes Tribal Council. This is why her edit wasn't as big. That's where I feel like I've noticed it come up more.
Okay.
A couple things there. I thought her edit was fine. Like when she was plot relevant, she came up, and when she wasn't, she wasn't. And you know that happens any season, but especially returnee season when there's a lot of you know stars of which to focus.
And she was, you know, arguably like, you know, she's pre-merge from a long time ago.
Yeah.
You know, she's not the, you know, there was the new hotness out there. So
yeah, there, you know, it's important to tell Jeremy's story and Spencer and Kelly anyway. But yeah, you look at Suri in Game Changers. I feel like Suri was fairly present. She wasn't as much in the pre-merge, which is what told me that she wasn't going to win, but she didn't ever went to Tribal Council. That was the only reason why she was still around, in fact, because pretty much everybody who was with her has confirmed that, like, oh no, we would have voted her out if we ever went to Tribal Council. So it makes sense that, like, pre-merge, she wasn't around that much because the only story they could tell is that Suri is in danger and she's going to go home. Especially in a season where people, one side really stayed on message and game plan, and that's what made it boring. Malcolm in Game Changers as well. He was not unfeatured, Janet and Ireland of the Idols. I think she was a fairly featured character to the point where she was like my hope to save, but recover the season. So the logic behind the idea is sound, but I need to see the data. I don't think it's an actual thing. And moreover, I don't think it's always some big conspiracy theory. The most likely reason I assume why somebody isn't on the TV is because aren't particularly compelling TV, especially in comparison to those other people that we are seeing on the TV, and B, they aren't plot relevant. Because
like Chelsea, who has a last name, I'm sure, from Ghost Island,
I don't think
was screwed in any way. I feel like she was voted for.
I think she was just voted out.
Maybe. Who can tell? And if that's the case, maybe it's not. You know, she certainly still didn't have much of an edit, clearly, given our inability to remember anything besides what she looks like.
And that people made her a cost celeb. And it's just like, that's the same thing that was happening to Heather. And it's like, you know, again, can we at least entertain the possibility that maybe they're not on TV because they're not good TV? And, you know, people are like, why are they going to be cast? Well, it's not like everybody who's ever been hired for a job was perfect for the job. Sometimes you think in the interview setting that this is going to work out, and then it doesn't. This is why everybody doesn't mate like marry the first person they end up dating seriously. Sometimes you learn more about somebody as time progresses. It's like, oh yeah, that didn't work out. And then they're not on the TV. It's not always like, this is the person that something bad's going to happen. And that's explaining why. It could be that they're just not that interesting or less interesting than the people we're having. So if you believe that, you know, you're right or these other people are right and I'm wrong, I suppose crazier things have happened. I want to see some data. Yeah. Even just charts. Give me the list of people you think were the purpled by being screwed up, idled out, any of those things. But also give me all the other people who were screwed by Survivor and explain to me, you know, which list is bigger. Even something like that might help me.
I do have to say, well, first of all, even with that data, you will not believe it because math is
math. Math sucks.
As we've discussed. But I think we would be remiss to not at least mention Purple Kelly's name as kind of the ultimate example, both for inventing the term purple edit and also the whole idea of being like, oh, they made her edit really small because she quit. Which, sure, but
that one I can believe that one.
I'm sure that's true. But like, you know, you also kind of have at the same time Nayanka, who quit the same day and very much is not under edited. And the argument's like, oh, well, but she was such a big character, so you couldn't cut her out of the show. Yeah.
That's what we're saying. So at the very least, if you think that, you know, it's because quitter, idled out, screwed by a twist, that person also has to be not that interesting, okay? If you are interesting, they're going to use you because they like to put interesting things on the TV. So that supports, again, my theory that if they're not on TV, it's possible that they don't deserve to be.
And also, you know, even like this isn't like a twist thing, but I think it's like fairly, most people fairly consider that Alec, who also has a last name in David versus Goliath, was Merlina, was like fairly under edited in the beginning because it was like, oh, he broke, you know, the NDA by posting a picture of him and Kara. And like, so he wasn't invited to the reunion. Like, we know the reunion part is true, right? And so then when he was so purple at the beginning, it was like, oh, is it because of that? And like, it might have been. But then when he became important to the plot, because he started to be, then he was featured a lot more.
Yeah, he was featured enough that I felt he was a legitimate, like, winner potential.
Which would have been wild, considering everything. Like, I think that was the main reason we didn't.
I was like, he probably isn't, but it's like, I can see a scenario.
Which made that suck, you know, knowing that. But, so it's like, they're not going to damage the story because they don't want you to like be attached to someone, you know. Like, we certainly were still like, because they do that when people get like, well, they I don't think of these people as being screwed by the twists because they keep adding these dumbass twists. So, and also, like, you know, being idled out isn't being like screwed, it's just like a thing that happens.
That's exciting, you know. I think they want people to feel something when that happens, positive or
right, like, because sometimes, you know, you don't like some of you're rooting for the person that's idled, but you know who has the idol usually, but you still like, it's like a better move when it's someone who seemed like big. You know, like if Xander idols out Deshaun or Ricard or something, that's gonna be huge for Xander. You know, it's much more interesting than if he idols out Heather, which I will say would be hilarious.
I got to use all this advantages to get rid of her. Yeah, I think is absolutely true, because this, again, fits in the idea of trying to make an entertaining television show, is if you lose in those type of ways, they might give you a negative edit if that's sort of out there, because they do want the audience to feel good when these moments happen. Winners will typically, not always, but get a more positive as they can create. You know, they really had to work hard in Thailand. I don't know. But like, yeah, that makes sense. That's storytelling. But just like, oh, let's make this person invisible. It's like, no, I think people invisible themselves in some ways, or just get lost in the numbers game. You know, if they're not, again, plot relevancy is a part. Because yeah, the person who is the most purple this season is Heather. I mean, she did get a moment in this episode. It wasn't a confessional, so again, it doesn't count. But when that moment happened, I was kind of like, I don't know if we need this take, Jeff.
Yeah, I was like, that's not who I would have gotten to.
Yeah, which brings us into, you know, what was actually the strongest element of the episode, and we're now just getting to it because, you know, man, we had to talk about Xander and Leona. If people are wondering, like, really, this episode that had all of this amazing, you know, like, social important content, and this is the stuff you guys are talking about, there's a reason why. That is.
Did you see the way he was looking at her when she was giving that profound speech?
That's right, and he was an ally.
Honestly, he really was kind of gazing at her.
Yeah, is because just like last week, there's not a lot for me to say. I can't judge their feelings. I thought it was very well presented. I thought it was compelling, both this and the content about Danny that we got earlier in the episode. There isn't a lot of debate for us to go through. And moreover,
Did you think it was good?
Yeah, I mean, certainly there are places on the internet where people are debating this. Fuck those places. And if you're one of those people, don't listen to our podcast, and please stop trying to at us on Twitter. My favorite is the guy who was adding Brad. Like, wow, are you barking up the wrong tree here? Not only, is there not a lot for us to discuss other than I thought it was great. I thought, you know, other than, again, the Heather part, which was fine. She handled it fine. It's just not what I need out of that moment. You didn't need to go there. It didn't need to make the edit.
I feel like, sorry to interrupt, but I feel like Xander had already kind of covered the white person perspective there. Like,
we didn't need to. Well. Yeah.
Like, and I think it actually, that is one thing I would bet. And maybe they cut it up, but it's like, there are people who are neither white nor black. And obviously where they're coming from, like this very specific moment, because this is, you know, when they were filming this, you know, the black experience obviously was a big part of where they're coming from. But I did think it was also interesting when they were talking in terms of representation rather than like for the culture and stuff like that, because those are kind of two different situations. Yeah. She says as a very white person, but is that like Ricard didn't have that opportunity. As far as I know, I don't think there is another Hispanic person on this cast.
No, I don't believe so.
Yeah. And like Erica never met Jeannie, the only other Asian.
Yeah. And Asia's a continent, not a culture.
Right? Exactly. And like, sure, Erica and Nasir are both Asian, but like Sri Lanka and Philippines, while both being islands, very different culturally. And like, they did show shots of Nasir. And I couldn't help but thinking, I'm like, Nasir's the only South Asian man I think that's ever been on the show.
That might be accurate.
Yeah, like we have, for women, we have the Twinnies and we have Karishma. But like, talk about, you know, rep sweats, as Code Switch on NPR puts the term. Like, like I can imagine him watching, like, you know, again, not to discount, like, what Black people in this country are going through right now, you know, and why they would feel compelled to band together. But I feel like if you're, you know, Nasir, because obviously it's a different experience. It's the immigrant experience. It's, you know, it's a different cultural issue. It's no matter what his religion is, possible like perceived Islamophobia, because again, people are racist and like will just be like, like this part of the world, no matter what you might actually believe, this is what I'm deciding. But like, you know, be like, wow, must have been nice for you to have people of your experience to band together with. Like, which he didn't have at all. And obviously they're not going to talk to Nasir, but like, instead of hearing from both Xander and Heather, I think it would have been nice to hear from Ricard or Erica, you know, who are coming from like a perspective that's different entirely.
Yeah. And it's not like Ricard has proven an inability to speak in this manner. You know, he was probably the very first this season. Now, if they didn't feel like speaking on this, because, you know, we don't need to play oppression Olympics or anything like that. I'm happy for this group to have their moment. It's a separate discussion. That makes sense to me, but that would speak further to not only did we not need a white perspective, we didn't need two. Which get to why we haven't featured this dialogue, because this is two white perspectives here. That's the other thing. It's like, I don't need to say much more than I thought it was a really great segment. And I thought, you know, they spoke well. Which isn't the same thing as saying they're well-spoken, which is, you know, not actually a compliment, generally.
Right. It's always, that's always something I think is tricky coded, because sometimes, you know, people do speak well, like, you know, you think about like Jamal last season, like always just like, you don't want to be like, he's articulate, but he also articulated his position.
A very difficult position to discuss in such an environment, right? Yeah.
He did such a great job. And I think Liana, especially being so young, especially being on the chopping block, mm-hmm. I think just did an excellent job. Obviously, again, a very different position, but I don't think I'm, you know, thinking like that clearly, like when I'm 20, you know, even if it's like, say, like the closest analog I could do if I was talking about like feminism or whatever, just like as, you know, a white woman, like I'm not going to obviously be talking about the cultural experience the same way, but like when I was her age, I don't think I was that smart. Of course, I did not go to Georgetown, so but so she obviously is intelligent. Not that she wouldn't be, but yeah, I think, you know, there's also like you were saying, you know, we're seeing Deshaun getting emotional with and like I think he didn't really say it, but I think when he was trying to rehash the stuff with Ricard and he's saying like that I came off aggressive, like he didn't underline it, but I think a lot of us know why he kind of wants to show that he is not aggressive, and like here he is being emotional, and like, you know, I thought it was really great how Liana pointed out like not being a monolith, you know, and stuff like that, like they all come from different parts of the country, like they have very different experiences. Liana's also Jewish, like, you know, that, and Shan is a pastor, like those are, you know, also very different life experiences. So
yeah, the credit for all this obviously first goes to these contestants. The next part of the credit goes to the contestants that started the campaign to make this happen.
I was so glad that Deshaun mentioned that. I wasn't sure that they knew that at that time, who was like behind that. Mm-hmm. But it was nice hearing that, you know, I was able to turn to my husband and be like, that's true. Like actual, you know, Black contestants, like former contestants of the show, like got together and they talked to CBS. Like they made that happen. I think it's like, Jatia was big on that, and Davey and Jamal Wendell. And Sean Wendell. I mean, obviously so many, but I know I'm pretty sure Jatia was actually one of the biggest out there. So, you know, want to give them their credit as well.
Yeah. So that's where the credit lies. I don't think the show needs it. Just the one thing that I thought I had in terms of the show is it's great that they're, diversity didn't stop in casting. They are allowed, mm-hmm. they are committed to, and we've seen this throughout the season, and we see this in this episode, of telling the stories of the people they have and airing out the discussions that they're having. And you know, I think that's great. And frankly, it speaks to why diversity is a good thing. Obviously, you know, there are the social reasons, and you know, Liana discusses it well, and the importance of representation, but also from a storytelling perspective, a great reason to embrace diversity is that it gives you a diversity of stories, and you know, you can have different perspectives when you suddenly cast different people. It's not the same sort of people every time in and time out. You know, we see this with superhero movies like Black Panther and Shang-Chi aren't necessarily that different in terms of like the arcs. It's just the same Marvel origin story arc, but they're different because it's different people. And I think, you know, the same thing we were getting in this season and in this episode. So I think those moments, the ones with Danny and the one tribal council, was why I ended up thinking this was a pretty good episode. Just, you know, potentially could have been marred by what I consider to be a terrible twist. In the end, the twist actually worked out in that it saved somebody I find more interesting than the person who went home. But that's not
also, I was like in terror because like, well, it wouldn't be like because of the game or any mechanic, then like, yeah, like Liana went home, but like imagine Deshaun like is pouring his heart out, you know, they have all this talk, and then it's like, and now our dumb twist sends home.
Yeah, so actually that's a thought I had as you were discussing earlier, and it's like, you know, learning the wrong lessons, like if there's a lesson to learn, not only like you had no drama in the challenge, and it's like, look at the tribal council you got that you almost ruined, like you just, maybe you don't need this stuff, you know, because I guess Probst have been hyping up this episode as like one of the best ever, which made everybody be like, see, he loves these twists. Oh, there goes Probst. Because no matter what the season does.
Forget about the Jeff Probst show.
Yeah.
Forget what he's really into.
And no matter what the season has done or will do, there are people who just like will always just default to, they love the twists and strong guys. And it's like, no, clearly what he was responding to, because the twist was nothing. Was this emotional and interesting content? Because he loves Lips for the drama. It's messy.
I will say, not to like be like, because a real credit goes to the host, which like it doesn't. You've addressed your credit. I think we've seen Jeff have similar-ish conversations before that he did not handle.
Oh yeah.
So I think
you can even argue how well did he handle it here, right? We're talking about throwing it to Heather. Now, in
not
the live
perfect,
environment,
I think an improvement.
Yes. He let them tell their stories. And again, moreover, this is what excites him. So this is what excites him, because I can't believe that it was the execution of this twist. Maybe a lesson will be, let's let them live a bit and let's encourage more telling of stories and cast more people, and not we got to find more ways to eliminate people without voting them out. One last thing to discuss for this episode. We've been teasing it, and I'm sure people are excited. There seems to be a groundswell out there. I don't know how big a groundswell it is. I don't know how far that ground is going up. That Erica is emerging as a dark horse, maybe even your edgic leader. I don't know. Somebody will have to tell us in comments. Are you buying it? Are you buying Erica as a potential winner?
Well, first I will say I don't think she's the most likely to win. I don't think it's like impossible. I do want to say I get it. I get why. We're just fucking desperate, man. that's something that's like, that sucks. Like, it's like that, words are hard sometimes. But like, I addressed this in the comment section once when talking to Blurry Denzel, our friend, as he epically changed his name, is why like the diversity thing is so important, because in the future, maybe it'll, and it's like, and I think this was brought up in the comments too, it's like, it doesn't necessarily have to be this season that it like pays off if say like Xander wins, but the problem is because all of the previous seasons. And the reason why that streak is such a problem is I don't want to have to be like, I think Ricard's playing the best, but like it'd be cool if Erica won, or be like, oh, Xander's an underdog, but I don't want him to win because I don't want another white man to win. And not in a way like the real oppressed people are white men, but it's just like that's not how I feel. And I don't think it's like if Xander loses, that'll be why or anything like that. Like I've seen someone theorize talking to Brad to all people, which is very dumb. but it sucks that that's something we have to think about instead of just enjoying the players as they are. And I hope that now that we have the diversity initiative, that like we'll start to see some regression to the mean there in terms of like gender. Now, obviously, like the diversity, like that's the thing that has maybe affected like the amount of white winners, but the diversity initiative is not like here to help women win more, because it's always, well, with a couple of
exceptions. All but one season.
Yeah, it's always 50-50. That's not the problem. And it's just, it just sucks. Like, it sucks. It's something I haven't been like brought up, watching at home, because I'm going to watch those seasons later and I'll be like, once we get to the 30s, it's all men, because that's spoiled.
Well, almost all, and then the one, the two women we get, not particularly satisfying.
Yeah, but I don't know that we're gonna watch those.
Yeah, there you go, touche. I'm pretty confident you're not.
Well, and like he's seen, like Ko Rong was the one he watched. But Cape Church may be able to do a couple episodes anyway. That's neither here nor there. Like, it's just I get it. It's like I understand why people are like, oh, this Erica truther stuff, how silly, but. We're just fucking tired, man. Like, it just, it didn't used to, that's the thing that's so frustrating, it didn't used to be like this. It was not.
It was like basically 50-50, you know, give or take a season or two, right? Yeah. No, something happened, and I don't know what it is. I have some theories, and then I reject other theories. But what happened?
And, like, I'm not out there, like, because of this being, like, Chrissy should have won, or, like, Nora should have, Angelina should have won. I mean, like, Angelina, a queen, but, like, and, like, I don't like Nick, but, like, gameplay, but, like, let's be realistic, you know? It's just, it just keeps happening, and it sucks. Like, there's just, like, I like Ricard, and in theory, I guess that's sort of who I'm rooting for. And, like, yes, it's better because it's also been a lot of white men, but the streak is not exclusively white men, you know, either. I mean, yes, sure, it's only Wendell, but, like, it's men, you know, that's what the issue is. Mm-hmm. And if it's not a white man, then that's great, and that helps from the diversity a little, but that's not what the problem is in this instance. Like, there are plenty of times where that's the problem, but, like, in terms of, like, who's winning, it's men.
Yeah. For me, I don't know how much better it is if the first female winner they get in six seasons is somebody who was barely on the show for large portions of it.
Right. Like, there's also...
And that is why I can't buy that Eric is a winner. I understand rooting for it. I have no problem with people rooting for most things. But to try and, like, point to specific things, it's like, well, people keep talking about her as a threat. It's like, yeah, that's also true of other players. Yeah. In fact,
they do that so that way you don't, you understand why she gets voted out at six or whatever.
Or I accept that she was a target two episodes ago for Shan until she won immunity. That was also true of Xander, right? Like, and I think that was more true. So, like, the construction of the arguments is just, like, I think you're reaching. And I think you explained very well why people would reach. But it's just, I think the chances went out the door, like, 2 weeks ago, and that sucks. And I think, yeah, and we can discuss the issues. In many ways, we might be tired of discussing it. Like, people just jumping on now, it's like, man, like, welcome to the party. It's been, like, at least three years of this, right? Because, like, again, it's now, this is going to be seven seasons in a row. But, like, that one wasn't on a trend of equal balance either. It was, like, several before Sarah as well, right?
Right. Like, if you think in the 30s, so that's a 10-season span. Like, not even counting Winners at War, because, like, that's it. Yeah, we have two. And one of them is the most, like, controversial when, you know.
Yeah. One of them beat, like, a woman that we were more cheering for, you know. Like, she's the one that's held up as the celebratory yes queen. It's like, well.
And it's like, we don't even like her, you know, as a person.
Like people have ignored that she beat another woman, and now they've just rewritten in the head that she beat Jeff Probst himself in the final travel castle. The other one is a Trumper.
I diverged the other way. My bad. So just so it's like, I was like, not saying that it was bad, but I was talking about the cop. So, but yeah, in that, obviously, yeah, she beat, I mean, the alternatives in that one were rough. Yes. That final three was rough. Yeah, it just fucking sucks. I know I said that. I know that's not eloquent. I feel, you know, it sucks.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah, that's just kind of where we stand, I think, with Erica. It's just like, I just don't see it. And moreover, if that is the case, I think the show has done a dramatic disservice to both her and women. So in many,
like,
ways,
if Erica wins, then the, like, attempted challenge throw is not like, oh, I don't trust Erica, we have to get her out. It's like, it's the, oh, she's too good, she's a threat, which, like, I'm not even knowing if they would be able to craft that. But it's just like, I don't think, I don't know. It's just,
I'd want to stop seeing her story through the perspective of other people and start seeing it more from herself, you know? And I know there are people writing huge essays about all the little moments, but, like, those are little moments, man. And sure. Natalie White, you can say,
yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. It's like, not only in that Russell is this, like, antagonist to beat, but also that, yeah, he's going to get the first time they wrestle, he's going to get a lot of screen time. That makes sense. It makes sense that they would want to pay attention to Shan and Deshaun and Ricard and like people like that. But like, because it's multiple people, and they could spread it out more. You could get an Eric, especially like we should understand why Shan targeted Erica so much if she won, because then that could be part of why, like, oh, Shan was really good at the game and she recognized Erica. But instead, at least for me, when I'm watching Shan freak out about Erica and Heather to a lesser extent, that to me is like, oh, Shan's starting to lose her grip on the game because she has no evidence for this, or like at best losing grip on the game, at worst like weird right away like conceptions of Erica being sneaky to a point that made me a little uncomfortable, to be honest, because it was just, I was like, you have not met her. Like, you know, right away in the real merger. God, that twist was dumb. Yeah. But you know,
and that's like, another one people keep pointing to. She's the lion. She's gonna start playing like a lion. Man, that was selling their bullshit twist more than they're selling her as a winner. Yeah, if that is them selling her a winner, then fuck this season and the show. Like, all the arguments people put forward for how the show is, like, this is your case? Like, I feel like there'd be room. I feel like you could do a Michelle. And they haven't even.
Right.
Even though as that was happening, I was denying it was happening. And I guess there you go. If you still buy it, if you still think Erica is a legitimate contender or even your top contender, I guess you could at least take solace in the fact that I'm often wrong about these things. But I don't feel I'm as wrong at this stage of the game and who can't win other than that one specific season. Anything else?
I believe you mentioned we didn't talk about Danny that much, and I believe you had that on your breakdown.
I like that.
Not to a peek behind the curtain. We write notes, or rather, Andy does. I do not.
Yeah, mostly that was another moment that I liked. And actually, here's the bigger thing, the question that both the Danny content, the discussion at Tribal Council, various other moments we've gotten throughout the season. Is this one of the more character-driven seasons in recent memory, barring the discussion we just had about Erica? Because I know, like, the constant complaint that was happening in some circles is that this is a twist-driven season. And, I mean, hey, man, we just had a terrible twist in this one, and we also discussed a terrible twist later. They have been present, and there's been all these advantages. But I feel like, and part of it is because the advantages, for the most part, did not come to any level of fruition, that we've gotten more character stuff this season than we had in a lot of recent seasons. I can't think of the last season that we're like, we've really gotten to know this many characters on this level. What do you think?
Yeah, I think this is actually, it's really interesting because it is somehow both character driven and twist driven.
Yeah.
And I think what that really means is that it's not that strategy driven, because the opportunities for strategy have been taken away by the twists. And like, so my dream is character and strategy together. And we get a little of that, but not enough. But yeah, I think, you know, they really have, like, I think, you know, certainly in the premiere, where we got a lot of those packages, and the way they've been doing that has been nice, because that's one little thing I think that helps me also see, you know, the vague possibility of Erica, although I still don't think she would have gotten enough, but is that they really have given a lot of moments to like people. Like, I don't feel like they're doing like a winner's edit, like,
yeah,
the way that maybe they have in the past, because like, let's say the most viable candidates at this point are Deshaun and Ricard. Like, we've seen pretty complex edits, I feel like, for both of them. And if it's not those two, then that's very true of like everyone else, because it's not as obvious for them, like, that they're the front runner. Like, maybe Xander, but I feel like they would lean in much harder to him being like an underdog. I don't know. It could very well be. And like, and again, to bring it back to the, like, it's like, I would feel like it's nothing against Xander. He seems fine. Like, if you won, it would be a bummer, because it just keeps being these white men over and over, even when he's the last one left before the merge.
Yeah, I mean, he was one of three. It's really not like a big
right problem. Exactly. but like it would just be frustrating because it's like, well, what? It like it would be bad luck, honestly, at that point for the show, because it's just like, what the fuck do you want? Yeah. At this point,
it's just, it's the same thing as the Monty Hall problem,
right?
Yeah, the stats will suggest that this is a thing that's less likely to happen, but doesn't.
But sometimes, but it's not zero.
Yeah, in a single instance, it could happen. Yeah, like,
yeah.
There were more black men cast this season than white men, and yeah, you know, this is what happens. You know.
Yeah, which you know, it might not still because he could still lose. But, and I've seen this theorized, about whether Xander is actually like even viewed as a threat. I think it would be really funny if he lost in Final Tribal. Just because I think also it would be nice to kind of see different games appreciated, because I do think that's maybe been part of the problem with men, but not really, because most of the time, the other, like the women who have been in the final three are not the most viable of choices.
They're not. I discussed this last
not
week.
Not discounting Winners at War. That was a very specific case. Nora, Angelina, like, I guess Chrissy, Julie. You could say was viable, but her social game was bad.
Yeah.
Julie, Laura, like, Laurel, like.
Yeah, no, it's, and that, you know, I mean, look at the man who's also lost, like other than like a Dom.
Right.
That's just Survivor now. You don't bring people to the end.
Yeah, like Ryan.
You have a chance of winning.
It's an easy go. Yeah, exactly. It's just, that's why they tried to do the final four. And one time it worked out really well. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I guess you could argue it sort of worked out in 35. Look, 35 is a whole ass mess. But like, it worked out in Ghost Island. I will give them that. And that was the one where they actually knew about it too. That was a great finale. Yeah. I was gonna say.
To not a very good season.
Not a great season, but it was a fun fucking finale. Anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about. But
yeah. No, I think that was a good point, because we are often strategy lovers, and there has definitely been like interesting like moments, but like Ricard is the only person who's like impressing me strategically still in the game, which final seven, sometimes there aren't many more than that often in seasons, but a lot of the other contenders, whether it was Deshaun, I think Xander is still a contender, just by happenstance, it would be more of a Fabio type win. Shan, I feel like was until, I mean, that was one of the reasons why she was voted out. We've had major issues with a lot of their strategy. So yeah, I think the strategy might be a little weaker, but I do think the character stuff has been strong. So I'm interested in what other people think, because I don't think that's the majority opinion, because I think the knee-jerk reaction is these things ruin character. And I don't think that's been the case, which isn't to say that they haven't taken other things away. I think you made an interesting case there.
I can be smart.
All right. If they wanted to comment about stuff like this, where could they do that?
Why? And they can do that at www.purplerockpodcast.com. They could also tweet at the show at Purple Rock Pod. Excuse me. Or more, if they want to have more interesting conversations, they can tweet at Purple Rock Emma, or even at Purple Rock Andy, maybe even both.
They're but if you have complaints about the show becoming too woke, don't. I don't want to hear from you. I will probably block.
Fuck off and die.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe not die.
I mean, I can live. Depends on how you really, you know.
Yeah. If you vaccinated? Say,
that's right. If you think that the something that the media is just making up gets you, we might root for it.
I mean, mild sidebar, but just related. Like, you know, sometimes players will like tweet the shit they get or like hear about. Wendell quote tweeted what someone shared. They like screenshotted from Survivor Facebook, a woman being like, oh, woke Survivor, blah blah blah, and like, you know, a sentence that starts with I'm not racist but is going to be bad, but this was I'm not racist but I'm starting to see why other people are.
Yeah. And what? Why? Because people had the temerity to discuss the difficulties they might have from being black in America. This, like, it's all up in my face. Don't talk about this stuff.
Also,
critical race theory and Survivor. Fuck.
Dalton Ross has pointed this out, but it's like, bitch, this shit ain't new. Like, this has been in, like, more cases with Sean and Vesapia have discussed this. Also, maybe in earlier seasons, but I was a child and I don't recall.
No, I'd say Marquesa would be the first one.
Yeah, that makes
in sense. Africa, they didn't really have a lot of opportunity, despite where they were at, because different conversations were happening.
But like obviously, like not to be like Heather, like wow, I didn't realize this was a problem. It's like I know this is the problem, but I know that most people know not to say that shit in public. Bitch, what? You typed that out and posted it with your whole name.
Apparently, people using their real names on Facebook hasn't led to people being more censorious with it. It's more a place where you talk about hating the government and pandemics being fake. So don't try to talk about us about it with us on Facebook. We will never have a Facebook page. Technically, we have one just so nobody else would have started one, but there will never be content there.
And yeah, if you're gonna, you know, if you feel that way, A, you probably already turned this off, but B, like, yeah, we're not here to like ride the middle because we don't actually give a shit how many people listen. We're just here to hear ourselves talk.
Feel free to contact our sponsors. Until then, I want to say a quick happy Hanukkah to all our listeners who celebrate, and a special happy Hanukkah, Matt. Streak kept alive!
Hey!
I'm going to hit some theme music.
All right.
Put on your yarmulke, here comes Hanukkah. So much Hanukkah to celebrate Hanukkah. Hanukkah is Festival of Lights. Instead of one day of presents, we have eight crazy nights.